This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark. Brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
This is Robert Stark. I am here with Matthew Pegas. We're going to be talking about our documentary that we did with Dr. Susan Block, Cunnilingus Quality, Incel Sex Therapy. Matthew, great talking to you. It was a really interesting experience making this.
Yes, it was. Great to be on.
So, I guess to start things off, we can talk about some kind of background information on Susan Block. So she's a sex therapist, and she also has a show that she performs that we also partaked in part of it, which is her show's in her documentary along with a more formal interview.
Yeah, and the Susan Block show, which she now airs on her website, drsusanblock.com, I believe it is.
She had a radio show back in the late 80s, and then she had a long-running public access show. And I don't know all the details, but she did experience, she has experienced issues with censorship in the past. And I know public access overall has declined. Basically, the center of any alternative media is on the internet. But censorship has been an issue with a lot of the content. So what Block does is she for her website, she is a full uncensored version. But for Facebook, she has to post a censored version. And I like how I actually like how she has a little cute bonobos over the nipples of everyone, including myself. I got bonobo nipples, too.
Yeah, I think that was almost censorship. A bit of a joke, because obviously.
Yeah.
Or maybe a press for equality, because her philosophy, if women can't show their nipples, then neither can men. And yeah, the bonobos are cute and much better than the gigantic white rectangle that I use while editing.
Yeah, you haven't gotten that skilled in editing so far. You're getting there. And so we actually had the same issue. So YouTube, we posted our main version for YouTube, that's a clean version, and there might be a separate video on Vimeo, which the full thing.
Yeah, there is, and I put a link to that in the comment, or not in the comments, in the description of the YouTube video. I don't know if that's risky at all. I don't know what the rules are about posting links to mature audiences only content in the description, but I did it, and I probably won't get reported. I don't know. We'll see. It's also, it's available on Vimeo, Stark Truth TV Vimeo, which is our other channel, and I also put that on Twitter. So hopefully that will get views too, because, that is the better version. You see the full Bonoboville communion and some other stuff, which makes it a lot better.
Yeah, we had this more formal sit-down interview with Block, and one of my friends commented. He's been a frequent guest on the show. I'll just say his name. Count Fosco said it was remarkable how I was able to keep a straight face the entire interview, considering a lot of the subject matter we covered.
Yeah, what did he think? You were going to laugh or, lash out in disagreement? Or both?
Well, yeah, a lot of this stuff is, certainly, it deals with serious issues, but a lot of the subject matter is stuff. Actually, I guess the thing is, I put out some interesting proposal in a totally serious, straight-laced manner. And also keep, a perfect poker face.
Yeah, definitely. For me, that wasn't really a challenge per se. The atmosphere there was playful, in Bonoboville in general. But I don't know, when we were having our conversation with her, it was very easy to remain very serious, because they are fundamentally serious topics. So I did laugh a lot while watching it, but while having the conversation, I think it was easy to give it the due weight.
And yeah, and with some of these ideas, like, I just want to make it clear, and just in case, like, Susan is listening or someone she knows, like, the whole concept wasn't at all trolling. I think it's actually a fascinating social experiment. I think it does have intellectual value. It's not trolling.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is a kind of funny element with us posting our interview, and a lot of people we're connected to are alt-right types or traditionalist types. So there is an element of there's a shock value in just bringing those two worlds together, but that definitely wasn't the intent. And we
yeah, that's probably why we got all those downvotes initially.
Yeah, well, I initially had just put it on Twitter, and that's kind of a more conservative sphere in terms of my output, and they got like 5 downvotes pretty quick.
No, but you're a quasi-liberal journalist. Let's just keep it at that.
Yeah, let's keep it at that.
Yeah, quasi-liberal, that's a good way to keep it. So,
liberal presenting. Demi-liberal.
Yeah, you definitely look the part.
Thanks, or perhaps no thanks, I don't know.
So, obviously, the title is Cunnilingual Quality, which, that's the opening title, and I mean, that's a little bit mysterious, but the second part of the title is Incel Sex Therapy, and this actually ties in. We got the idea because she wrote an article for the site Counterpunch. I think it's titled Incel Sex Therapy Bonobo Style.
Yeah, she titles a lot of her explorations into different topics, and for the listeners, Dr. Susan Block covers pretty much any sexual taboo imaginable, and she typically will title her articles or the pages on her website such and such sex therapy, whether it's foot fetish foot fetish sex therapy or incel sex therapy or whatever else. So yeah,
I also think that's part of the reason that we're getting a lot of hit counts. I think it's broke our record. I was surprised how fast it was growing. I mean, I don't think it's going to go viral, but I was still impressed by the amount of hit counts relative to what we have in the past. I just think this buzzword incel is really taking off. So,
definitely. And the word sex, of course.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I've been posting more stuff to our YouTube channel over this week. I've been very focused on that, and it's interesting to see what gets hit counts, because I've also been posting a lot of old shows, and I noticed our the show we did, Paraphilias and Their Origins, got like about 60 views as well, and I think it's just because those words. I mean, it's clickbait, so it's good to know. Whereas like LA, Robert Stark and Matt Pegas talk about LA, got like 4 views. So yeah, it's all the title.
This issue is getting a lot of mainstream media coverage, which we can go into. But the thing about a Block is she does discuss it in a thoughtful manner. Whether you agree with her outlook or not, she addresses things in an intellectual, thoughtful manner, as opposed to what you get from the mainstream media, which is just, it's anti-intellectual, and it's this kind of a faux moral, kind of this like faux moral outrage, of virtue signaling. So she's coming at it from a very more progressive standpoint.
Yeah, a genuinely radical standpoint, and one that has a lot of compassion and a willingness to think outside the box, which is definitely not what you get from the mainstream liberal media.
With this incel issue, initially it got mainstream media coverage. Was that with Elliot Rodgers? There was a number of massacres prior to that, but they didn't get that much attention. Oh, yeah, the very first major, there was one, I'm actually going way back, like, George Sodini was, and that happened around, kind of, really long time ago, but that didn't get that, you've heard of that case.
I actually don't know that much about it, but what I wanted to say was, I mean, incel is a fairly recent buzzword. I don't even know if that term was getting kicked around that much, even at the time of Elliot Rodger. I seem to remember that, around Elliot Rodger, that was the first time I heard about, like, beta males in the manosphere, and Red Pill blogs. But incel, I only started hearing about over the past year. It's really over the past...
Oh, right. With it's more the incel term has taken off in the mainstream media with the Alec Manassian, that massacre in Toronto.
Exactly.
And then there was another one, and there was that school shooting in Oregon where the school shooter posted the angry Pepe on 4chan and said beta uprising, and... That there was that incident.
So that's
there's
all
been,
kind of come into focus.
They've all kind of connected. So it is kind of tied into that. So I guess with the whole theme of incels is in the past it was more just kind of like a joke. Like there would be a character on a show. I'll give you an example. Have you ever seen that show Married of Children and the character Bud Bundy?
No.
And he had his like blow up doll.
No, it's interesting his last name was Bundy, though.
Yeah, I mean, sort of more... Or more just the characters, which is more kind of like a butt of jokes. But now the media is actually describing them, actually. They're actually comparing them, like, to terrorist organizations.
Yeah, no, that was the most kind of thing I was most disgusted by over the past year, how it was an immediate jump to not simply even dismissing incels entirely, but describing them as basically a terrorist organization, like the same way that, you know, you see the media talking about ISIS is basically how they'll talk about incels and toxically masculine incel forums. And and as Block says, I don't disagree that there's a lot of heinous shit that comes out of those spheres, but the immediate jump to that I found dismaying. And I here's where I agree with Block entirely, and enthusiastically, as she puts it very well, is that regardless of how toxically masculine these people are, regardless of how privileged they are, if we keep talking about it in this way, it's not going to get any better. It's going to get a whole lot worse. And to me, the truth of that is so, so clear. And the moralist mainstream liberal outrage over it is just kind of putting your hands over your ears and not wanting to kind of face the reality of this.
Block is absolutely right, because I'm sure she has a lot of clients... She talks to people from all walks of life, so she has that connection where she understands psychology, and she also comes at it with compassion. I think with a lot of mainstream journalists, would you say they're just being? I mean, Block's certainly not this, but I do think with a lot of mainstream journalists, they're just acting as NPCs.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And there's this whole groupthink mentality where. Yeah, it's almost, and I've faced this when I've tried to talk about this with more mainstreamly liberal people, not only do they talk about it in these terms, if you dare to talk about it in any other terms, then you will be seen as bad. I mean, of course not everyone is this ridiculous, but that is the kind of reaction I've gotten. Both with incels and like the alt-right, too. Anytime I've ever tried to broach the topic of, like, well, maybe there are some kind of social issues that these people are getting the butt end of, I'm immediately like,
but I thought being left wing wasn't originally supposed to be about the downtrodden, but no, these are a group that are privileged. That's what they'll say. They're privileged, they have a sense of entitlement.
Yeah, and they're not, and look, there is some truth to that, but no one's willing to view it from any other angle, and it's a whole cult. It is kind of a cult of agreement and shunning anyone who might stand outside that and viewing them as not only wrong, but morally wrong and perhaps even dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, conservatives, I think it's more that they might just view them as pathetic, but the whole moralistic crusade against incels is primarily driven by the left.
Definitely. Or I actually, in some ways... and I think Block would agree with this. I hesitate to even say the left in this case. Not that there aren't problems with, like, left-wing worldviews. I'm not trying to give that a total pass. But a lot of the biggest drivers of problems like this is not the left. It's the center. It's the, you know, it's the center. It's the urbanite center.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, I think with these, because these buzzwords, left versus right, is establishment a little bit too bland, or can we say that?
Yeah, I would say establishment. I mean, there's certain contexts where, yes, this is a matter of right-wing views versus left-wing views, but there's other contexts where it's corporate groupthink versus daring to think anything else.
I think it's important to make the distinction between the incel movement versus the incel phenomenon. So, obviously, I mean, the incel phenomenon is a large phenomenon, and the incel movement is a very specific online movement. So, the incel movement is a product of the incel phenomenon, but it's important to make the distinction between incels, the incel phenomenon, and like self-identified incels, like incel as an identity politics movement.
Yeah, no, I would imagine that's very, very true. There's a lot more involuntary celibates than there are self-identifying incels who actually participate on forums and such. And there's also... there's a lot of degrees to this. There's a lot of incels who are virgins and feel that they will always be virgins. And there's also a lot of guys, I would say maybe even most guys at some point in their life are not, you know, are very sexually frustrated. So it's a very broad phenomenon that relates to type of things that you talk about in, like, the manosphere and such. And then there's a very... you know, very, very small subgroup that fully identifies as incel and supports, you know, whatever incel uprising type movements.
So, yeah, to your average person, they'll go on those sites, and actually a lot of those sites have been taken down. I mean, there's some of them actually have, like, advocated criminal violence, but
yeah.
Some of it has just been censorship censorship for offensive material, and to your average person, they'll just go on there and be absolutely appalled. But the thing is, like, the more alienated and disconnected people become, the more misanthropic their worldview is.
Definitely, the more violence we'll see outbreak. Another point that Block made that I wanted to bring up earlier, actually, is that even though it seems like it's this recent movement of incels who have this manifesto and are going to enact violence, I think sexual frustration has played a role in violent male behavior probably since the beginning of time, you know, beginning of humanity. So even a lot of serial kill, you know, you were talking earlier about, like, what were some of the first incel shootings and such. It's like, well, the first ones that you really identify as that might be Elliot Rodger, but was there an element to that of Columbine? Is there an element to that even in a lot of serial killers? And I think the answer is yes. This is a deep-seated social issue that has really always been around and is especially bad in kind of the atomized Western world.
Yeah, right, so... it's been an issue throughout history, a major factor for a lot of revolutions, wars, I mean, just overall violence and crime throughout history. I mean, a major contributor to conflict. But I think what is unique now is actually taking this issue and making it into identity politics. And, I mean, a lot of that's to do with this kind of internet subculture where... people are disconnected, so they base their identity on these online subcultures, mm-hmm. and just the overall culture of identity politics. So, I guess with identity politics is a lot of a libertarian type or radical traditionalist will say any form of identity or collectivism is bad. So I'm not a radical traditionalist, but I guess sort of there's a difference between an identity as being part of a community versus an identity as taking an aspect about you and making that like what you want to show off to the world. So that's a little bit different than just being part of a community.
Yeah, definitely. There's kind of pros and cons to identity politics, I would say.
Yeah, for sure. So I wouldn't say there can be positive aspects
Yeah, for sure. And, I don't know, in terms of the whole incel issue, I'm also reminded of Chuck Palahniuk's recent book, Adjustment Day, which kind of describes the millennial generation of men as a kind of boom generation in terms of population, and there just being these inherent problems to there being this many guys around, this many guys with unrequited testosterone, unrequited
male. Yeah, there's even like a crooked politician in the book who wants to start a war so we can dispose of like the excess numbers of young men.
Yeah, no, it's a fantastic book, philosophically, if not literarily. I mean, I think it's good in terms of both things, but the ideas are really interesting. There's a John McCain-esque politician who wants to start a useless war in the Middle East to dispose of a huge mass of the male population, but instead the male population rebels and sort of takes over the country.
A lot of people want to talk about like what is the root cause of this issue. I mean, there's a lot of different factors, but if I had to pick one factor, it's pretty obvious it's social atomization or social isolation.
Yeah, that would be the root cause. I mean, you could say, oh, it's all feminism, but I mean, feminism is part of a broader trend to, not even just a trend, a broader great cultural push that's been going on since at least the French Revolution, you know, the Renaissance, etc., towards individualism and the individual as the unit of society. And I don't know, you could say that we're kind of reaching a point as a culture right now where things have become truly postmodern and we truly are all atoms, you know, atomized.
And I also want to comment on that theme of misogyny or toxic masculinity, because a lot of these men in the incel movement and manosphere, a lot of them do just flat out hate women, so I guess you could say that's misogyny. I think the core issue is like what is the root cause, and I guess the view that a lot of the mainstream feminist view is, they would say, as they're holding on to the kind of, it's a product of a patriarchy or a white male privilege, and my general view of that is that social isolation tends to lead to this kind of us versus them mentality, because actually, I mean, the establishment narrative says that collectivism leads to an us versus them mentality, but I think actually social isolationism, where if you're not connected to other people, you see them as the other and a group that is not, that there's that lack of cohesion and connection, and you're less likely to be sympathetic towards them. And mm-hmm. with this kind of breakdown in social cohesion, people are less, there's more of that kind of us versus them mentality. And I'd also say the same about the whole, like there's a meme about like the Chad versus the incel, and that's more of a kind of an online meme, but that theme has been around in American culture since at least the 80s, so I would also say that kind of nerd versus Chad culture is a product of a more atomized society as opposed to a more healthy, cohesive society where people are working together.
Yeah. Revenge of the Nerds phenomenon.
Because I've heard people comment in other parts of the world on these like YouTube channels and blog posts, and they say that, I mean, that phenomenon, social status is universal, but that explicit like Chad versus nerd dichotomy is a very, very it's a very facet of American culture in particular.
Yeah, well, what I'd say about that is I don't have any easy fixes. I'm not here saying, oh, the world is broken and then here's how we fix it. But I do think that that a healthier society, these differences in people, you know, people who are more cerebral versus, you know, physically strong. In an ideal society, everyone would have a sense of place and purpose. But in an atomized society, it's every man for himself. So therefore, the tensions will be heightened. I mean, I don't doubt that there's always going to be tensions between different sorts of people, who are fundamentally in competition, but in a good society there is a kind of harmony and balance between people with different talents and strengths kind of complementing each other. And the more atomized we get, the more resentment there's going to build between people of different types.
I think that's like the one thing I actually forgot to ask Block about that's really crucial, the social isolation.
Yeah, we could have gone deeper into that. I mean, but I can say, I think with Block, it's interesting, because I think what Block would say, and what a lot of good leftists, the type of good leftists that you can have a conversation with, like Block, would recognize a lot of what we're talking about in terms of social atomization, and that it's a problem. I mean, it's the center pseudo-left that is not going to own up to there being a problem. The left, in fact, better than most conservatives you're going to meet in the United States, recognizes that there is a problem related to social atomization. They blame everything on capitalism and free markets and corporatization and consumerism. And I blame a lot on that, too. I just think it's only half the story. I mean, I blame, liberalism as a whole, both social liberalism and economic liberalism, which I see as part and parcel of the same machinery.
Oh, yeah, sort of how the French author Michel Houellebecq makes that comparison between social liberalism and economic liberalism or capitalism.
Yeah, and I mean, that's become very clear to me in my worldview that I do see them as part and parcel of the same thing, and I no longer am really able to see it any other way.
And one interesting observation about Bonoboville that both of us came to is that it is a very kind of a socially liberal, I mean, it is socially liberal environment, but there is a positive sense of community that you would obviously not find in a nightclub or just that exists in a mainstream society. So there's kind of a question, because it is, even though it's very, I mean, it obviously is very left-wing, but it is a community based around people who want to come together based on shared values, so you can agree or disagree with those values, and a lot of right-wing types would obviously not embrace those, but it is people coming together on shared values, whereas in a environment like, say, a nightclub, it's more just the kind of fusion, it's more just about competition and competition for social status.
Yeah, certainly.
And also, it's people, there's no social cohesion because it's just a bunch of strangers coming in, but then a bunch of strangers coming in, and then competing for social status.
Yeah, well, I would say I'm something of a tribalist, and I think that things that can work extremely well on a small scale simply do not work on a mass scale. So that would be an interesting kind of question opposed to Block, is like, obviously I can see how there is a social harmony in this sort of commune that you've created, but do I believe it could ever be extrapolated onto a whole society? Maybe onto a whole nation, depending on its size, you know? But the bigger you get, the more impossible it is to carry out such a cohesive society that doesn't devolve into atomization and a kind of more primal competition scenario. And that's why I'm not a globalist.
So we did talk about the mainstream feminist or SJW establishment reaction that it's just a toxic masculinity. As far as the right goes, I guess if you want to analyze public figures, so there's Joe Rogan, who's more of a libertarian, and he interviewed Jordan Peterson, and Jordan Peterson has this concept. I mean, I think, well, he was calling it enforced monogamy, which
yeah.
I think enforcement, is it enforced monogamy?
Or socially, that's definitely how it was interpreted.
Socially enforced monogamy, which is very different than Block's idea of ethical non-monogamy. But anyhow, Rogan's response was, if you have a guy who, say, like, makes the most money or is the best athlete, then shouldn't he? There's nothing wrong with being able to get, like, most of the women. And that, I mean, that's just a kind of a radical individualist view. There's that view.
Well, look, I say, I don't think there's anything wrong with that guy getting, like, the first choice or whatever. I just think, as I would agree with Peterson, that if that guy just selects one woman, then, you know, then it's a lot better. So I'm not a liberal. I'm not a leftist. I'm not for kind of toppling natural hierarchies. I just think that there should be societal safeguards in order to best distribute resources fundamentally in order to create the most cohesive society with the least chaos.
And then from the more socially conservative outlook, you have Ben Shapiro, and his view is more that these guys are pathetic and they're adopting the leftist victim mentality, and they just have to kind of embrace a more socially conservative narrative and work hard and succeed economically. And the thing is, the thing about Shapiro is he's from an Orthodox Jewish background, so even though he's from L.A., you're kind of isolated from a lot of these social problems. So if you're in a socially conservative community like Orthodox Judaism or Mormonism, you play by a different narrative than if you are in a more secular or atomized society.
Yeah, and I mean, I question a lot of things about Ben Shapiro, one of which is his ability to really reckon with certain social issues. I think it's very easy to have your values like, oh, I'm a, you know, Orthodox Jew. Oh, I'm a capitalist, and these are just firm, principled values which I hold to. That's all well and good, but you have to recognize how holding those values is not, those values, like, if his values were extrapolated to the whole society, maybe there would be improvements, but that's simply not happening. So you have to kind of look deeper than he usually does.
What's the problem is a lot of these people, whether it's SJWs or conservatives like Shapiro, a lot of them are ideologues, and they don't think about, in more pragmatic terms, like what works and what doesn't. They're so entwined in this deep ideological way of thinking.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that pisses me off a lot about a lot of conservatives is they're so obsessed with principles and this noble idea of holding to principles. And I used to be more like that. I mean, so, like, I'm not trying to be hypocritical or anything, but I just think it's you have to be more pragmatic, especially when you're talking about mass society.
So we were talking about the media coverage. So recently there was that Law and Order episode about incels where they portray incels as this violent network. And, I mean, from purely satire standpoint, a lot of people who follow online meme culture find it hilarious that they're talking about all these different memes in a serious manner. But at the same time, it's also just propaganda, because most of the people who watch it are just NPCs.
Yeah, I love how this meme is like just taking the world by storm, including this show. Now everything is seen through the lens of NPCs versus those with internal monologues. But it's a very effective way of describing it. I mean, a lot of those crime shows.
Yeah, instead of Law and Order Special Victim Unit (SVU), it should be Law and Order NPC Unit.
Yeah, featured on MSNPC, you know.
But what I do find fascinating about Law & Order is there is this fusion of SJW politics with this celebration, glorification of police state power, including the more, kind of celebrating the more cruel and sadistic elements of the police state mirrored with SJW politics. You see that interesting fusion. So I think the show is garbage, but it is an interesting social commentary in our society.
Yeah, well, as long as it features some female cops, it's obviously progressive.
And Ice-T and a female cop, so that's very progressive.
Yeah. So it's all good.
And that's is an interesting contrast to Block's articles, because she does talk about how our society invests so much in things like the police state and military and prisons, rather than actually trying to improve people's lives. So she's coming at it from a very progressive, more very left-wing standpoint, but a much more authentic left-wing standpoint than the kind of culture that what we get out of the mainstream, which that show portrays.
Yeah, she's genuine, she's consistent. There's a point where she was talking about John McCain and how she didn't give a shit that he died. I mean, she's definitely not part of that demographic who...
For sure. Liberals who call him a hero. I find it so obnoxious now, not just McCain, but now liberals who are trying to rehabilitate George Bush. And obviously, Block... Obviously, Block is not a big fan of Trump, and you can see that by the acts, all those different acts on the shows. But... I mean, she's obviously not a big fan of Trump, and that's pretty clear. But I just think it's hilarious how these liberals want to rehabilitate all these like neocons, like from the Bush era.
I mean, they want to do it, and those neocons are doing it themselves. I mean, I guess there was some recent thing where Michelle Obama was talking about how she's pals with George W. So it's, I don't know. I it almost seems like a questionable strategic move on the part of the establishment to be so transparent about how in bed neoconservatives and the center left are, but that is very transparent now, and I hope it
and
has
when Block,
disastrous consequences for
yeah
them.
I mean, I don't think Block's really a big fan of those kind of establishment Democrats, because I know an interesting fact about her is she ran for the vice presidential ticket for an independent candidate when Barack Obama was running back in 2008.
Yeah, her and her husband, Max, some of the most anti-Trump people I've really interacted with, but, or that's probably not even true, because everyone just seems to hate Trump, but they would refer to Democrats as the better two evils.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, and then another thing is she does talk about the importance of compassion and the bonobo way, so... Yeah, because NPCs, they're obviously not acting in compassion. They're just talking about churning out these talking points and propaganda.
You know, it's like people who if they had a Twitter, it's like they're only retweeting things from, you know, a set list of original posters kind of thing. It's just like a retweet mentality.
So it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting about the bonobos, because I didn't know that. I was kind of under the impression that the animal world, there was either animals that were polygamous or monogamous, but I don't really get the impression. Like, I was actually reading Roger Devlin commented on some species of I think chimpanzees, and I'm not sure if he was talking about bonobos, but he was talking more about like polygamy as being the norm among like primates. And I think what I get the impression with bonobos is more just a kind of a more egalitarian sexual free for all. So Block would like to see humans go more in that direction. And the key question is whether that is practical to implement, because U.S. Block this question. And I actually asked Block this question, and you commented to that on too, is the right-wing, the manosphere response, or dissonant right-wing response, is that would lead to, like, higher status men monopolizing most of the women. And Block's response to that, we talked to the themes of the bonobos and sexual equality, but she said in the past, the whole concept of... a lot of these traditional institutions, she said, implemented that, and she also said capitalism does as well. So, I mean, that was her response to that question, which that's definitely a major theme that gets brought up a lot, and it's also goes back to that essay, Sexual Utopian Power.
Yeah, no, I mean, I didn't live in the 40s or 50s, so I can't, you know, speak firsthand you know, what would be better, what you know, where more people were left out. But I do get the impression that it's worse today. And again, I go back. I think what Block is recommending in terms of polygamous society could probably work in a cohesive and small society, but I just definitely don't think it could work globally.
Because it's interesting what you said about the 50s. It's really hard to comment on that era if you weren't around back then. What are your thoughts on the whole theme about this kind of double standard, how even with feminism and social liberalism, you're still sort of expected to fulfill these gender roles, and the key question is also how that contrasts with the fetishization of the past eras, like the 50s.
Yeah, definitely, and I don't fetishize the 50s, really. Not, I personally don't, no, the Peaches quote, which is from the Bret Easton Ellis podcast, Peaches being a Canadian pop artist, was that she doesn't think men ever really got their sexual revolution, or that didn't go far enough for them. And this pertaining to double standards of male expressions of femininity, the way those are perceived, and the way those continue to be perceived, versus female expressions of masculinity. Female expressions of masculinity have been quite readily embraced, you know, the Wonder Woman phenomenon. I made a joke earlier on this show about female, you know, cop shows with female officers being seen as really progressive. However, as much as, you know, people might pay lip service to, you know, getting gay males involved, or getting males involved in more traditionally female roles, it's still not taken well by a lot of people. They're still seen as weak. They're still seen as less desirable by potential female partners.
Acceptable to be outright homosexual, but you're talking about the double standard with bisexuality or with straight men who are non-gender conforming.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about all of that. It's just a generally less accepted thing. Now, the reason that you'd hear from a leftist, and for what I would have argued when I was a leftist, also, Jamie Stewart, former Stark Truth guest Jamie Stewart of the band Choo Choo, wrote an interesting piece about this for HuffPost, because he's a bisexual man.
Yeah, and because I do think that, I think that in some ways it's more socially acceptable to be fully homosexual than to be bisexual.
Yes, definitely. It's a kind of a tricky thing to be bisexual sometimes as a male.
And there are a few other factors, there are practical factors, I mean, some women are nervous about getting STDs, including HIV. I mean, I'm sure that's a factor. So, I mean, that's a practical factor, but I also think there are stigmas involving what's expected from the standpoint of a traditional gender role, so I think that's a factor, too.
Yeah, well, I think women are just naturally attracted to more masculine men. But,
Well, Block said that now that there's more... I mean, there's a trend that women are more independent. They don't need a high-status male. Do you agree with Block's comment on that?
I don't, and I'll tell you why. I think that that is the way things are supposed to work. There's a logic to that, and that is what I used to believe would happen. However, I think that's what it, you know, a lot of liberal ideas look good on paper, but don't look good in practice. I would say this is one of them. On paper, that seems extremely reasonable. However, in practice, that is not what's happening. Liberated women are still going for more traditionally masculine partners. Kind of more beta type guys are getting left out or getting taken advantage of.
Okay. So there is actually this book by John Pepple. And it's titled Begging for Sex, Gender Equality from the Other Side. And it's actually about this very theme. So John Pepple, he's actually coming from... He's not a right-wing or a manosphere type. He's actually coming at it from a more progressive standpoint. I think he's much older and was around during the sexual revolution. So he started on the left. And his hope was basically that the sexual equality... sexual revolution would basically lead to that, But what he says is for shy males, gender equality has been a cruel joke since those rules do not exist. So that's the exact point that he makes in his book. I've not read the book, but I'm familiar with it, and he's making the exact same point that you did.
Yeah, this has been my personal red pill experience, is kind of having one view that made logical sense in college. You know, it was a very academic setting, and then kind of coming more into the real world and realizing that it just didn't apply. If I could put on kind of a feminist or left-wing hat briefly, what I would say is there was a time in my intellectual life where my view was that I always had some problems with, you know, identity politics, feminism as it, you know, just as a male. Obviously, I'm not going to support something that doesn't also lead to my liberation, because that would be, it always struck me as somehow, you know, cucking. But what the type of feminist or left-wing view I held to right before I switched sides, which, again, you this apply, was when I found your show, I used to kind of hold to this view that there could be a kind of feminism or liberalism that worked towards everyone's liberation, and that is by not liberating females as such, but the feminine side of us all. And this is a kind of view that, this is also, I bring this up because this is a view that Block was kind of arguing for. And again, this is still a view that I'm sympathetic to, that what if there was a kind of feminism or liberalism that emphasized that sort of liberation of everyone tied up together, and just letting this other side of our dual nature as humans reign, or at least achieve a more equal footing. And I'm still highly sympathetic to that view. I just don't see it happening. That can happen in a socially cohesive, smaller society, but it's not happening, and it will never happen on a global scale, given the way that people are.
So yeah, obviously, Blanca, generally, that's what she wants to strive for, and if that could actually happen, I would be totally in support of that and sympathetic to that. But the reality, I mean, that's not what is happening in today's society. So I can totally understand the kind of drift towards a more reactionary outlook by a lot of young men, because that's obviously not happening right now. And
The reactionary outlook needs to be there to balance the books right now. The metapolitical goals that I have, which are fundamentally to end anti-maleness and end anti-whiteness, in theory there could be a left-wing version of that, but right now the most expedient way to achieve those metapolitical goals is by kind of joining forces with the dissident right.
Do you think that the whole concept of cunnilingus quality relates to that? Because it sounds like a silly concept, but it's just something I kind of thought of it because it plays in with that whole theme of about reversing gender roles, but addressing a lot of those concerns. So, I mean, as I said, I'm obviously not trolling. It sounds trollish, but I think it's an interesting social experiment because it would test attitudes towards gender roles. And Locke actually put that idea out there to her guest.
Yeah, no, which is funny. I mean, I think that, I know you're not trolling. I think a humorous aspect of that view is its specificity of specifically creating mixers to... specifically creating cunnilingus mixers. But the general idea of finding mutually beneficial sexual solutions is, I think, very interesting.
I mean, that's part of the reason with the social experiment out there. It is possible you could have higher status women who might be interested in that idea, but just from society standards, they wouldn't feel that it's socially acceptable to do so, even under a feminist narrative, because even they still kind of conform to this whole rule of looking for like a man who's more dominant. So I mean, that's part of the reason I kind of put that idea out there, because it would kind of expose that dichotomy. But I do think there could be a segment of the population who would be interested in that. But it would be more of a niche fetish, no?
Yeah, it'd be something that would happen in a place like Bonoboville, not at the local nightclub.
Or I mean, I doubt like a sorority would invite like all the nerds over for like those kind of mixers.
No, but it would make a pretty funny comedy.
Yeah, it certainly would, and I think it has happened in some obscure novel I read.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of grounds for humor. Oh, yeah, the novel Journey to the Abra Island, I did read that.
Oh, yeah, that's a bizarre book, I don't know.
Yeah, pretty good, though. Solid 4 out of 5.
another thing we talk about is prostitution and, yeah, legalization of prostitution. And I didn't notice Block posted this post about Trump signing this legislation to crack down on prostitution on a federal level. And I would actually, I mean, I would could respect Trump if he was a hardcore social conservative, but considering kind of who he is, I mean, it is, I do think that's extremely hypocritical, but he does have to kind of pander to that socially conservative base, as well as an element of, I mean, there is a segment of feminists in the Democrat Party in coalition with social conservatives supporting that bill, and Block pointed that out, that I just came across that on her Facebook feed, and her proposal actually is prostitution where the government actually subsidizes it for incels, so, yeah. I mean, ironically, there is a faction of the men's rights movement that, I'd say a faction, a lot of men's rights movement types and manosphere types are right-wing reactionaries, but maybe a faction that, the faction that's more, a little bit more incel and more socialist, so the PUA wing of the manosphere, I mean, they're hyper-capitalistic, and that wing is actually declining a lot, but they're definitely, for the incels, that's something they would definitely support, so there, I mean, there is,
yeah. There's probably crossover.
There is a crossover. So,
and I mean,
on the record, I actually support that idea.
Yeah,
and a conservative would say it's like this crazy leftist idea that you're using taxpayer dollars to subsidize prostitution. But I actually think like so much societal, like social ills, including crime, are a product of sexual frustration.
Yeah,
I actually think in the long run, we would actually save so many resources on police and incarceration if we were to do this. I think in the long run, it would have a benefit in reducing crime and social cost.
Yeah, I mean, let the people come, as Block would say. And I mean, I've always been in favor of prostitution, or legal prostitution.
Well, yeah, but she's actually saying,
as long as I've been able to think about the issue, it seems
subsidization.
Yeah, I can see why that's more controversial, but I'm also highly sympathetic to that.
I think some country, I'm pretty sure it's the Netherlands, they actually do subsidize it for the disabled.
Yeah, that's the kind of liberalism I can definitely get behind, if anything is liberalism.
And I know that a lot of reactionary manosphere types I really like to bash socialism. And they say socialism has led to dysfunction in gender roles. And obviously, like they like to point to the example in Sweden, which is a country that, I mean, just a very like left-wing society, which is probably the most feminist society in the world. But, the flip side of that, I do think, besides social isolation, I think another factor for the incel phenomenon is that incels are disproportionately also lower economic status, so neoliberalism is decimating the middle class and working classes economically, so economics are also relevant to that issue.
Yeah, and on the issue of Sweden, this is something that I'd probably disagree, a lot of people on the alternative right would disagree with me on there and in the manosphere, but I say, what's the honest-to-God problem if there are more feminine populations of certain countries, as long as those countries don't have like totally open borders? I mean, I just go back to this. As long if a society is cohesive and working, who gives a fuck? The problems arise when you kind of have the clash of these cultures with globalism, because then they're completely demolished. That's what ends up happening.
Yeah,
I think a certain degree of embracing, and this is going to be controversial and might get me in trouble with certain folks, but I would say that embracing a degree of femininity and having that balance in a civilization for its male population, that's a sign of civility. I mean, look at some of the most, I think some of the most civilized countries on Earth are England and Japan, personally, and both of those countries, perhaps especially Japan, really exhibit a great balance of the feminine and masculine in their aesthetics and in the way that their men and women operate, or have in the past, and then the problems arise. Well, in England, the problems have arisen, you know, based on its globalism. Japan, I think, still kind of holds to that cohesion.
And, yeah, I mean, it's also interesting about double standards. So it seems to be there's this branch of American feminism is there's these extreme double standards about gender roles. We were talking about, like, men are expected to fulfill gender roles. It is interesting to observe other countries. So in the case of Sweden, I've heard that couples will split the bill on a date. And in the case of Israel, which is also an extremely feminist country, women are required to serve in the military. So I guess if you are going to have feminism, then women have to take up the responsibilities of men as well.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I'm not ideologically opposed to that. I just think that... No, I've already said it a few times now, so I won't.
So I don't know, like, the exact public policies between what men should do, what women should do, but the key question is, like, what is equitable balance of power? So a lot of these manosphere types want to go full reactionary, and that's one extreme, but if you want to change gender roles so much to the point that you're creating incels, that's not functional either, so... I guess the key, I think what we should, kind of going back to what I was saying about ideology, is not looking at through the lens of ideology like conservatism or social justice, like just thinking about in a practical sense, like what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, definitely. Pragmatism.
Before I wrap up this show, one thing I do want to add about the experience, it was a really amazing experience, but it almost felt like the whole night, like when we woke up in the morning, it was all a dream. Like, there was just something really surreal about it.
Yeah, it was very surreal, and I think you kind of capture that in the video. I mean, Bonoboville is such an immersive experience.
And it was
where
also,
it is,
yeah.
I'm not going to say exactly where it is, obviously.
No, don't say it.
Very kind of desolate. No, I would desolate is too strong a word. It's just a very kind of run-of-the-mill part of L.A., and then you go in, and it's this kind of... this art gallery, and there's
out of every single piece of art there, they have all this like exotic, erotic art, and I'm like, oh, well, that's a really cool Patrick Nangle poster, and Susan's husband was like, oh yeah, every nail salon in the 80s had one of those.
Yeah, I guess you like that more than the pictures of people getting fucked. But hey, I have one thing I want to add about Parfrey. If I can go ahead and do that.
Go for it.
Yeah, so the one thing I didn't get to ask Buck about was, and it may be interesting to Stark Truth listeners, is that Susan Block was connected with the late Adam Parfrey during his life, and she apparently, they had a great deal of mutual affection, and there was even talk of some of Susan's, or Dr. Susie's blog posts or writing she'd done being published by Feral House, although it never materialized. So I think that is very very interesting, kind of illustrates some of the themes we talked about today, where Block is very far left, but also pretty much a free speech absolutist, or at least very much in favor of free speech. So there's kind of that
she has natural connection between herself as a free speech advocate, because she's had issues with censorship, and free speech is under siege. And, I mean, most of it is primarily under corporate censorship rather than state censorship. So, it's really important to preserve freedom of expression, whether it's political expression or cultural expression. And I guess I'll comment on briefly how I discovered Block. So, I interviewed Mike Marinacci about his book, California Jesus, and he's actually friends with Block, and he was a guest on her show. So I initially discovered Block that way through the mutual connection of Mike Marinacci. And then Block is actually featured in the very beginning of our documentary Supply, in the scene where I'm on the beach, and she's the one who announces Luke Ford.
Yeah, because she did. Luke was on her show perhaps a couple of times in the 90s when he was a porn journalist. So there's a bunch of interesting little threads of connection that you and, by extension, me have had to Block. Yeah, and I just wanted to comment in terms of her connection with Parfrey. I think that there is a kind of apocalypse culture spirit which runs through her work. We both had a hard time, and we actually failed to get her to say anything against the concept of political correctness, and that's fine. But
well, to be fair to her, is she didn't have a problem with criticizing political correctness. She just wanted a more specific definition. I think that's fair.
Yeah, no, it's 100% fair. I think people of our generation and younger have a very clear idea of what political correctness means in the current climate. But she, as someone much older than us, has a somewhat different take on it. So that's completely fair. But I will just personally say that I think that spirit of kind of exploring forbidden areas of knowledge, no matter how taboo, and having kind of an honest, objective look at them, kind of outside the normal range of the normal Republican versus Democrat, liberal versus conservative argument, that I really get that from Block, and that's something that I really love about her. That's something I think we try to do on your show and with our docs, and again, I would credit Adam Parfrey as being someone who really exemplified that perhaps better than anyone else.
Yeah, for
publishing.
Sure. Yeah. That, I mean, that is really the one thing that is missing so much in our media today with all the, I mean, everything is totally NPC'd.
Exactly, and I mean, I was so, I got very, when I first read that, you know, incel sex therapy post of Susan Block's on Counterpunch, I got excited while reading it, because I was like, this is what we need more of this. This is what will guide us through these chaotic times.
Matthew Pegas, it has been an excellent show. Thank you so much for being on.
Certainly has, Robert, and again, wonderful working with you on Cuddling Quality Incel Sex Therapy.